embodies my spirit of coaching.
Yeah.
Is if you have a desire to get to the next level, that's something in you that needs to be manifested, to come out, right? There's a reason why you have that desire. Like for me, it's growing my business. For you, it's probably growing your business as well, I would imagine. And that feels authentic. It feels natural. It feels good. You're helping people. And I want to make that like a must for people. Like there's the only way is up. Like there's no other option. So how can we get people in that mindset so that you can accomplish these things on a more regular basis?
How's it going, everybody? I'm Justin Miller, host and owner of Legends of Athletics, and welcome to another episode of the Legends of Athletics podcast. I believe, and y'all have to correct me, I'm so sorry because I've done this on the last two episodes. I think this is episode 126 or 125, but we have Mr. Michael Seeley with us today, and he is the host of the High Performance Podcast, and he's also versed in psychology. And so today's episode is going to be a great one, and I want to give him his flowers before I allow him to talk a little bit about himself. I always try to make sure that I give a pretty good intro to each guest that I have on. But he is the host of the High Performance Podcast. He's a high performance coach, licensed psychotherapist with a master's in counseling psychology. He also has a book out right now. He's the author of The Only Way Is Up, How to Raise Your Standards and Love Your Life. One of his quotes on his website that I liked and I wanted to ask about, but I'm gonna ask about it a little bit later. So I really like this quote. It says, "Everyone is capable of getting better results. The key is to identify the barriers that hold you back." So, Mr. Michael, welcome to the Legends of Athletics podcast. And, you know, I want you to give us a little bit more about yourself.
Hey, thanks, Justin. Great to be on your show. Love your show. So I'm Michael Seeley. As you said, I'm a high performance coach. What that means is everyone, no matter what they're doing, whatever their profession is, whatever their walk of life, there are ways that you can perform at a higher level. Sometimes life demands that you perform at a higher level. Exactly. And what's interesting, I think everyone listening can reflect back on their life when you were forced to up level, forced to perform at a higher level, and you just did it because you had to. This is the kind of coaching I do, is we talk about how people can get to that next level and make the desire more of like a must. Like the only way is up was like a reference to my book. Yes, I can share the inspiration for that title at some point, but,
we would love to hear the inspiration for that title. It's a great title that's very eye catching.
Yeah, well, why don't I just tell you right now, real quick?
Oh, yeah.
The synopsis of the story was The Only Way Is Up. So this book is accidental mentors who showed up in my life and said an inspirational quote to me that literally changed my life. And that's the whole theme of the book. So I have like my sixth grade teacher, for example, who's in there, who said you have to be cruel to be kind when he punished me for not doing homework. And I finally got it. I have quotes from my dad in there. I have all kinds of quotes. And the main quote, "The only way is up," is when I was rock climbing. This is in Berkeley, California, many years ago. I was getting into rock climbing. And I mean, I love sports. So I was a little bit out over over my skis, as they say. And I was free climbing. And if you've ever done any free climbing, like, I mean, it's very dangerous.
That is insane.
Right. The consequences of free climbing are very, very serious.
Yeah.
And I did something really stupid. I got up too high on this climbing rock, which is basically a practice rock. It's called Indian Rock in Berkeley, California. And you can get high enough where if you fell, you would probably break bones and maybe even die. So it's about that high. And I got up about that high and I froze up. I did not know where to go. I did not have enough climbing experience. And I said to myself, this might be it, right? Not a good way to go, kind of embarrassing. Now, fortunately, there was an experienced climber below me who noticed that I was in trouble. And this guy had obviously many, many years of climbing experience. And he started coaching me. And he said, you know, just relax, take some breaths, move sideways. I can see some holds you can grab onto. And I was terrified. I was literally shaking. And so he calmed me down. He coached me. And then I said to him, hey, well, what if I just come down instead of going to the top? Because he wanted to coach me to the top. And he said, absolutely not. Because if you're a climber, you know that it's safer to climb up, right?
Right.
If you
climb
down, you can slip, right? So he said, and I was debating with him, and he said, dude, comma, the only way is up, right? And when I heard that, I was like, okay, I just got to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the theme of the book. And by the way, obviously I made it to the top. Thanks to the accidental mentor who showed up in my life and told me this. And, you know, it was the best coaching I've ever gotten because he calmed my nerves. He got me in, you know, kind of out of my freak out zone. And then he told me what I had to do, not what I wanted to do, not what I mm-hmm. should do, but what I had to do because it was life or death, literally at that point. And he coached me all the way to the top. And when I got to the top, I was so elated. I basically looked back down. He was still there, but mm-hmm. I never thanked the guy.
Yeah.
And I went, wherever you are, man, dude, right? Thank you very much for that. So that embodies my spirit of coaching.
Yeah.
Is if you have a desire to get to the next level, that's something in you that needs to be manifested, to come out, right? There's a reason why you have that desire. Like for me, it's growing my business. For you, it's probably growing your business as well, I would imagine. And that feels authentic. It feels natural. It feels good. You're helping people. And I want to make that like a must for people. Like there's mm-hmm. the only way is up. Like there's no other option. So how can we get people in that mindset so that you can accomplish these things on a more regular basis and move up to where you really belong? So the book is really my coaching philosophy.
Yeah. And I think that's a great way to segue to the first question that we had about exploring how thoughts and emotions and mindset impact our performance. I know that we talked from the first time we scheduled a meeting and talked to them, even when I was on your podcast, about how focused you have to be. And I think whenever we talk about it in, I think whenever it's talked about in a commercial way, I can't think of the word I'm trying to say exactly, mm-hmm. but I'm gonna say commercial way. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we talk about going through adversity and people discuss about mindsets and things like that. But like you just alluded to in the point of your book and what you do as a coach on a daily basis, getting to that level of being a high performer, a lot of people that live life every day, just living life, choose to go back down to where they were instead of climbing up, because that's a little easier, a little more familiar, and it doesn't take as much strain. I think whenever you're trying to go from level to level to level, you go past the point of the known. Of course, we go into the unknown, and then you have to rely on, I would probably say rely more on your instincts and who you think you want and what you want to become versus who you are in that moment. So how would you say that our thoughts and emotions and things like that impact our mind, our athletic potential? And as far as where the athletics or mindset and as far as what we want to do in life, how does that impact us?
Well, obviously, very, very, very much. I mean, this generally speaking, if we look at personality types, right? So we call that kind of like more of the thing that's harder to change would be your personality, mm-hmm. right? So that I would consider personality just the your habits that add up day after day after day after day. Mm-hmm. You become your habits, right?
Right.
So I believe that you can change your personality to a certain degree, but it's very, very difficult. So that if we look at personalities that are basically that perform well, that are good at endeavors, and for example, athletics, right? There are people who generally just are not competitive for whatever reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they may not, in that arena of athletics, may not thrive just because they're not into the competition. So there's that. We call it like personality traits, and you can take personality tests and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean it's not changeable. It just means that that's going to be harder for you to change if you're not like a competitive person. And what I mean by that competitive, it just means that you enjoy it doesn't mean you want to crush your opponent. Yeah. It just means you enjoy kind of mixing it up and striving and stuff, right? So competition is not a bad thing.
I think your definition was great too. To give a quick insight to that, I think a lot of times when we think competition, we think crushing someone and not enjoying the competitiveness of it, or enjoying the what's another word for competition? Enjoying the measurements of where you are in comparison to another person, I guess. Or another team.
Well, the word competition comes from the Latin competere, which means originally roughly translates to strive together. Mm-hmm. So if you strive together,
right?
Like if we're in a basketball game together and and you're beating me, I want to rise to your level. You're gonna pull me up. So that's exactly. That's kind of more the spirit of competition, is pulling people up as opposed to crushing them down.
Exactly.
Right.
You good?
Your original question, right? So like, emotions, mindset, how does that affect performance? Just starting on the baseline of personality, right? So you have to be honest about kind of what your general personality is. And again, you can change that. You can tweak it, right? And then after that, it's really a lot of just habits, right? So like, I call habits not just physical habits, but mental habits. So what is your style of thinking? Are you a worst case scenario person? Are you, hey, I can figure it out kind of person? Like, what's that sort of mental philosophy that you have this habit of thinking throughout the day?
Right.
So there's that. Like, that's a big one right there. And people can change that too. There are defaults for that too. It doesn't mean you can't change. So I'm big on doing some initial testing on my clients. I don't get too clinical on it, but I want to get an idea kind of what their tendencies have been historically. Mm-hmm. Right. So that if I see a lot of sort of worst case scenario negative thinking, I want to pay attention to that, because that means they're going to be a little risk averse, a little extra cautious. And that has advantages, but also has a lot of disadvantages too.
Exactly.
So I want to like test for that, kind of get some baselines. So a way to quote unquote cure that sort of, I won't call it negative thinking. I'll call it more cautious thinking.
Yeah.
Because negative thinking typically is what's the worst that could happen. And I'm going to focus on that to protect myself. That's really what it is. Cause, and I want to build ways for people to change that habit of thinking, so that we don't just feed them positive thinking and say, hey, don't think negative. Like, right. Because if I say, hey, don't think about the pink elephant, right.
Yeah.
Right. Then you'd be thinking about a pink elephant. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So again, to review, it's basically, I want a basic personality test, basic, positive, negative thinking type of test.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then once I get the baseline on the person I'm working with, I work on ways to tweak them in the direction of more risk taking, more just being comfortable with the unknown, because they have this desire to perform higher and to change. That there's that, but then there's like this, ooh, I'm afraid, right?
Right.
And so what we want to do is kind of lean into that fear and explore that, as opposed to kind of shoving that on the back burner and hoping it doesn't pop up later.
Exactly.
Right. So I like to reframe fear or quote unquote negative thinking as more of like, I'm cautious, I'm careful, I'm smart, right? And I look at it that, and there's no shame around it. And then we can go, okay, I'm also a big percentages guy. So if I ask, say, hey, Justin, so like you want to take on 5 new big clients next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you say, well, I don't know, it's kind of stretching myself thin. Like, I don't know if I can do it, right?
Right.
It's like, all right, what are the chances if I gave you 5 clients today that that you would not be able to handle it, right? Now I'm presenting a hypothetical. You go, whoa, 5 clients, like that would be sweet, right?
Exactly.
And then I would say, okay, well, what's the percentage chance that you would fail with all 5 new clients? Like, right? Let's say, and I want to answer for you just for the hypothetical.
Say,
wow, now that I have them, well, like fail them, I don't really do that. It's like probably like 5% maybe, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, 95% chance I could. But if I asked you before, like, hey, if you had to find 5 clients within the next year and, you know, be top notch for them, you might go, oh man, I don't know, 50%. Like, I don't know if I could get five, you know, big new clients. So exactly. I work on that, those percentages, and we get the percentages down when I do these hypotheticals. And that, that gives people the chance to shift out of the, or not leave that, that cautious thinking, but kind of rein it in, right?
Right.
Go, right. Or like, you know, basketball players at free throw line, and they're, let's say historically they're shooting 50%. Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what would be the chances of you bumping it up to 70%? And just ask them that cold to be like, I don't know. Like,
right? I think then, I definitely agree. I mean, I think I've had, I'm sitting here thinking as we've talked before, and even with athletes that I've had, you can kind of, as you're questioning the athlete, you can kind of gauge where they at, where they are.
Right.
For me, I think as I build relationships, that's kind of the thing that I'm able to see more of. Because I'm just able to kind of gauge, even in general conversation, how you talk about yourself, how you view yourself and things like that. In the world of athletics, a lot of times we talk about competition, but it's also a lot of people compare themselves. Like you may be on a team where you're a pretty good athlete, but you compare yourself to the top athlete. So you compare yourself to the kid who is 6'3", 6'4", 200 plus pounds, runs fast and things like that. And it can make you discredit yourself and your skill set and what you bring to the table. And I think that's just a unique part of life and in athletics as well, is you just have to get to a point to where you appreciate your skill set and appreciate what you bring to the table, because we all don't bring the same thing. And so learning that role and learning where you are can help you fix that thought process. And what you were talking about is being flexible in our mindset and not fixing our mindset, because what we are is not permanent. And so you just have to be flexible in it. I think it's almost like I was reading a book about, I wish I could remember the book title. It's by Ian Robinson, though. I'm sure you've heard of him. Okay. And so he was talking about power and how some athletes display power, like athletes who are power hungry versus those that are not. In sports, in talk shows, you hear them say, oh, this athlete has a killer instinct, this one doesn't, because everybody doesn't crave the same thing. So some people don't have to express their will over an opponent in order to get the point across, like, hey, we won a game. And some people are like, no, I want to bury you. I want you to know that you have no chance. And so I think that that all goes within the same thing. Like you said, doing an assessment of your mindset, and then appreciating who you are, what you bring to the table, and then just exploring and exploiting that to your highest potential. And then even then, you talk about high performance, going beyond that to see what you really can go to. Mm-hmm. This question we don't have on there, but I want to ask you this. How many people, just talking, right? What percent do you think people use of themselves to reach their highest potential? If that question makes sense, like, do you think that we ever get to a point where we're going or get 80% from what we really capable of, or 90% or 60%? Like, what, I guess in your perspective, what do you feel?
Yeah, I think it just really depends on the situation. So like, for example, that situation of me, you know, rock climbing, me rock climbing, that was 100%.
Yeah.
You know, maybe even 110. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we can't get over 100. But I think it really does depend on the situation. So to use your full potential, the 100%, if it's not coming in externally, if the challenge is not tough enough externally where you have to give 100%, that's the challenge, especially for high performers or athletes or anybody, is that how can I intrinsically, you know, get that 100%? Even if the pressure on the outside is not forcing me to really do that. So that's the thing. And I think that's really where we come in as coaches. So like if you're training and you don't have to give 100% every time you train, you're going to burn out. But like,
how
we can see athletes, for example, who are not really training at a level which is going to better them, and we need to push them. So it comes down to what I like to do with athletes. I think we talked about this before, is I have them write like a mission statement, Like, why are you doing this? Right? What is it beyond yourself? Right? Like, say you want to be in the NFL. Great. Right. Awesome dream, man. Wonderful, right?
Yeah.
But if it's just about you and just about getting on TV and make posters about you and stuff, that's cool. But like, that's not going to push you as much as my mission is to inspire youth players through my story that they can achieve, you know, great things. And my mission is to support my family, and my mission is to support my community, right? Like, I like to do that with athletes, and so they can give more of that close to 100%, mm-hmm. because they could be in a situation where they're kind of like, maybe they're baseball players toward the end of the season. Right. They're just kind of like, I'm burned out, you know, I'm in a slump. And if you remind yourself really why you're doing the sport, mm-hmm. right, that's going to bump you from like maybe 50% to 70% or 80%. Right. So I think that's how you get that intrinsic motivation. Is you, mm-hmm. like, what's your big purpose of why you're doing it, and keep reminding yourself? That helps a lot. Yeah.
For the person who struggles with motivation, would you say that they should start with external motivation? If they struggle with pulling it out of themselves within, where would that person find that motivation if it's not intrinsic by nature?
Well, I mean, I'll go for the cheap answer, which is get a coach.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really honestly, like, that's what we do. So yeah, it's like, it's just the value you're going to get from a coach, or even a teammate who you trust, or mm-hmm. like, if you're a business person, like, is there someone you can call? Because I think that when we get unmotivated, we tend to isolate. We sure. tend to kind of, especially dudes, honestly, like guys, they don't talk as much, don't reveal as many emotions. Women tend to be a lot better about that, of like mm-hmm. going talking to a friend. So I think it's really just reaching out for some sort of help and just kind of admitting, like, you know what, like, I'm no longer in denial. I'm actually in a slump. I'm actually kind of burned out. Mm-hmm. And I just need to air that out and talk to someone, get some solutions. Because if you're in that state, and I use the word state because throughout the day, we're in different states. In the morning, mm-hmm. like, we might be unmotivated just naturally. Afternoon, maybe higher motivation. But what happens with, say, like, being unmotivated for a long time, and even if you get into a depression, is that you are in such a low state that you're literally not able to think of solutions. Like, you're just in this such a low level loop. You can't even like see the light at the end of the tunnel, and you need someone to kind of open that door, other than the tunnel, coach, friend, you know, mentor, whatever. And that's the quickest way to get motivated again. Is work, you know, talk to somebody.
Yeah. I know for me, it's just about, you know, I always talk about, people talk about stacking days. I'm a person that gets motivated by stacking wins. And so, you know, what are the little wins I can get throughout the day? Did I get up? Did I, you know, brush my teeth? Did I work out? Did I get some time out in the sun? Things like that. Those are things that I look at as well, like taking small victories or whatever it is in your life and getting you out of that space. Because I know what it's, I when you said the loneliness, I thought of it because I've been there before. And it's hard to think. It's hard. You can't be creative when you're down. Like, you're not as creative. And a lot of the thoughts that you have, it almost feels like everything is closing in on you. It feels like you're just getting deeper and deeper and sinking into that place and that hole. And so I think that, like what you said, it does take you expressing that to someone else. And then two is better than one in many cases. And so that person may be able to see solutions for you in order to help you build that momentum to get you back on path to where you need to go, which that's something that I want to ask you next. We talk about having our mission to get to where we want to go. We talk about goal setting. We talked about how to mindset, to not having a fixed mindset, being flexible in mindset. Well, the percentage of things we can get up out of ourselves as far as becoming a high performer. Well, what are some techniques or things that you would say that help us stay focused when going towards our goals and aspirations? Because we know that there are going to be things that go wrong, but things go right, even for no matter what we're trying to do, whether that's sports or life or business, whatever that is. What strategy would you go for with staying focused in that arena?
So staying focused, well, let's take the opposite of that. I'm unfocused.
Right. Right.
I'm kind of scattered. I'm in I'm in a game. Let's say I'm in a basketball game, and there's you know, it's tied up, and there's whatever 15 seconds left, right? So, and let's say that I'm just unfocused. Like I'm in a physiological state which is not allowing me, number one, to be focused.
Right.
So to get focused, oftentimes it's some sort of a ritual that you've practiced where you get your physiology correct, right? Mm-hmm. And what you do is if you're noticing that you're really anxious and your thoughts are spinning, right? You're basically in a high anxiety state, and you want to a couple breaths through the nose, especially activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which basically literally calm you down with about 8 seconds.
Yeah.
You want to do a couple of those. You want to, so the steps are like this. You, if you're unfocused, you acknowledge it. That's number one. Hey, I'm unfocused. That's okay. You normalize it. You don't freak out about it, blame yourself. You go, okay, now I caught myself. I noticed it. Great. That's step one. It's just simply noticing that I'm experiencing this. Number two, what are the techniques that I've learned from my coach or whatever that can instantly get me a little more focused and get me out of that kind of agitated state? Couple breaths, right? Couple nose breaths. Maybe I have a mantra that I've been practicing. Again, you got to practice this before the big events, right?
Exactly.
You got to pretend that you're in a tight situation and you are scatterbrained. You got to actually get the athlete into that state and then get them out of it, right? So then when they do inevitably experience it, they got the techniques. So maybe number one, catching yourself. Number two, quick, get out of that physiological state. Number three, what's my mantra maybe that I've been practicing, which is like literally the word focus, right? So that if you're practicing that with the athlete, and they have like, okay, focus, focus, focus. Or maybe it's something else. Maybe it's like shoot the ball, or like whatever it is, or like the basket, or whatever it is, something that works. They get that mantra going. And then right there, now you notice we're starting to kind of narrow in. Maybe if you're viewing this or listening to this, you're following along and you're kind of even imagining yourself as like a basketball player, getting out of that unresourceful state. And then what you say is like, okay, what is the task? What's the task? Right? Mm-hmm. What do I have to do? Then your coach explains the play for the next 15 seconds of the fourth quarter, and you're laser focused, and you're like, okay, right, execute the plan. Like, what's the task? So it's really to get focused. You just want to catch yourself being unfocused, and then you have stuff that you've been practicing to narrow that focus. That's what I do with my athletes, with my business people, is like that sort of process right there.
Yeah, I think, and that's something too that I think that you get more like with your star athletes, they don't want to talk about it, is in big moments they tend to, or some get so stressed that they lose focus of what the main goal is. Especially you talk about sport like basketball. Let's say we call it play up for the shooter, and he's not ready, he or she is not ready. Then it's easier to get those thoughts flooding in of the moment and not stay focused on the task. And so that's very important. So, Mr. Mike, I told you he was going to try to keep it at 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to end here. We got to end with a fun question. If you're going to eat one food in your life, if you're going to eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
And I saw that question, and it's such a hard one.
Yeah.
Because I love food. That's a real tough one. I'm gonna go with pizza. Like really good brick oven, high heat, thin crust pizza with the best ingredients on it, a little bit of olive oil on it.
Yeah.
I can do that the rest of my life. Anything else, I might get sick of it. So there you go.
There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Well, for everybody listening, if y'all heard me on this one, hey, I'm a little stuffy. The weather's kind of getting to me, but this has been a great podcast. Mr. Michael, appreciate your time, and thank you for jumping on the episode. For anybody that wants this information, look in our show notes. Also, don't forget to go over to his podcast, the Michael not the Michael Seeley podcast, but the High Performance Podcast. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and like the podcast. Let him know how he's doing. And that's going to help his podcast grow and move up the rankings as well. For everybody that listens, you know what I say every time. Take the road less traveled. Do the things that legends do. Be 1% better each and every day. And as always, be legendary.